From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Tensions continue to simmer between Moscow and Washington in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In many respects, the divide between East and West is deepening. Oil companies are canceling partnerships with Russian firms. State legislators are calling for the state's sovereign wealth fund to dump Russian investments. President Joe Biden has announced that the U.S. will close its airspace to Russian aircraft and its pumps to Russian oil. But the United States and Russia are continuing to work together, at least on one issue, salmon. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, people on both sides of the Bering Strait have a big stake in fisheries research.
There's a map scattered with orange, green, blue, and red dots spanning most of the North Pacific. On the map are three flags of Arctic nations, the U.S., Canada, and the Russian Federation.
You know, this interaction between the countries in this is really something that has never happened to this scale before.
That's Mark Saunders, the executive director of the five-country North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission. He's talking about the 2022 Pan-Pacific Winter High Seas Expedition. Vessels from both sides of the Pacific are braving gale-force winds and 13-foot seas as they crisscross the ocean from the edge of the Aleutian Chain to the Strait of Juan de Fuca, all in the name of research on challenges to wild salmon runs that are important to people on all sides of the Pacific Rim.
This past summer, last year, the Yukon River did not fish for the food. Zero.
That's Mike Williams, Sr. He's the chair of the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission. It's an organization that manages and researches fisheries using a combination of traditional knowledge and Western scientific methods. Last year, the Chum Salmon Run on the Yukon River collapsed. Never before had so few fish swum up the nearly 2,000-mile river. Regulators closed all fishing on the Yukon to preserve what little of the run remained. Williams says in recent years, he's watched the run on the Kuskokwim dwindle as well. In the past, he says fishing was relatively unrestricted. Residents would return to their fish camps shortly after ice on the river broke up in the spring. But in recent years, he says residents have had to wait until June, long after breakup, to start stockpiling their essential staple.
We depend on the salmon to sustain us through the winter. And we're very concerned about the returns of our salmon in all of the rivers in western Alaska.
It's not clear what was behind the collapse. The Intertribal Commission and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, for that matter, spend most of their effort studying what happens in freshwater. But that's just a small part of a salmon's life.
The salmon spawn in our headwaters. They go down to the ocean, and something happens in the ocean.
And it's not just western Alaska. In southeast, Chinook runs from Haines to Ketchikan are listed as stocks of concern. Salmon fishing on the Yunik River has been banned outright for years. Some, including Williams, say too many salmon in the Bering Sea and the North Pacific are being pulled out of the ocean as bycatch from trawlers that scrape the seabed for sole and flounder. Others say fish from hatcheries all over the Pacific Rim are outcompeting native fish. Some say climate change is affecting the food web, or a combination of all the factors. But one thing is clear. Something is happening to chum and chinook salmon in the open ocean.
We know that a lot of the poor survival for chum and other salmon is related to the marine environment.
That's Mark Saunders again from the North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission, speaking from his home office on Vancouver Island. He says there's quite a bit known about how the ocean is changing.
But you need to know where the fish are and have actually had your hands on them and understood how they're interacting with the environment, what they're eating, what the conditions are, and what predators are out there as well. And that is, I think, a lot of that. That is a large black box. In particular, this winter period, we know very little about.
He says the goal of the survey, the largest ever conducted, is to shine some light in that black box. Scientists are hoping to map out the distribution of salmon across the North Pacific using new DNA techniques developed over the past decade or so to understand where salmon interact with predators, prey, and each other, not to mention a generally warmer, more acidic ocean.
And the big question is, how is a changing North Pacific Ocean affecting our salmon and improving our ability to understand how that change is going to impact people and fish and fisheries into the future?
That brings us back to the orange, green, red, and blue dotted map. Earlier this winter, ships from the U.S., Canada, and Russia set sail for the North Pacific. Each is assigned its own area to sample. The U.S. and Canada are tackling areas in the Gulf of Alaska and west of British Columbia. A vessel from Russia is surveying an immense swath of ocean spanning areas south of the Alaska Peninsula, all the way out the Aleutian Chain southwest of Adak. The Russian vessel's survey work started late last month. It actually tied up in Dutch harbor a day after Russian troops started their assault on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv. Unalaska's port director told KRBD the visit was tightly scrutinized by U.S. border agents. Alaska's chief salmon scientist, Bill Templin, says he watched the invasion unfold.
My first concerns were for the people of Ukraine. But then when I walked into my office and I sat down, I was thinking, oh, okay, so what does this mean? We've been through very tight, very tense times in the past.
He recalls Russian scientists including islands disputed with Japan on maps of salmon stocks, all in good fun, as he recalls.
First 2 years they got it past me, and the Japanese had to come over and correct me very politely.
But this is more tension than usual, to put it lightly. The head of the Anadromous Fish Commission says an American scientist was scheduled to board the Russian vessel to allow it to survey within the 230-mile U.S. exclusive economic zone. That didn't happen. That means the Russian boat can't work too close to the Aleutian Chain. And Templin says that means salmon activity within the zone will remain a blank spot for now.
It doesn't ruin the results. It's not a failure, but it's going to limit what we get. And it's taken years to get this winter coordinated. So it's a little disappointing.
But Templin says scientists from Japan, Canada, South Korea, Russia, and the United States have always put their work first and their political leaders' policies second. And he says that'll continue.
The salmon all go to the same place. So they're all grazing in the same field, so to speak. And so for all of us to work together to understand what's happening out there and the way it affects our nations is... I think it's a pretty huge deal, and I'd hate to see it go away.
So far, at least, geopolitical tensions haven't overshadowed the need for cooperation, at least not when it comes to preserving wild salmon. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Commercial fishermen from Alaska to Maine have been gathering in Astoria, Oregon, since the late 1990s to share spoken word poems and shanties about life at sea. Like most performances, that gathering has been on pause during the pandemic. But this year and last, fisher poets have met over Zoom to continue the tradition remotely. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Two fishermen from the Central Kenai Peninsula were at this year's Fisher Poets Gathering held last weekend. They had some technical difficulties at the outset.
We know there are folks who couldn't make it tonight. Schoonmaker and...
Video.
I hear Clark.
Hey.
Yes.
I'm here.
This is how we do this stuff.
They almost didn't make it, but Steve Schoonmaker and Clark Whitney joined the virtual gathering just in the nick of time last Friday to deliver a poem and a sea shanty to a remote audience.
Hey, Clark. Have at it, baby.
We almost missed the set.
Skudmaker, who lives in Kisilov, has been going to Fisher Poets in Astoria for over a decade. He says he's appreciative of the chance to meet up virtually, even if it's not quite the same.
Even though when you're on stage and you see the audience and they're not maybe saying anything, I get feedback from it. You know, I can look at people. I can feel the energy in the room. Then it becomes a performance, you know.
He's kept up the in-person performances locally, including at open mics in Homer. But he says he's looking forward to getting back to the in-person format in Astoria next year.
It becomes like a family down there when you run everybody. So that's a huge part of it. When we all get together again, we're all bringing back something, and we're doing it again. And then the fans you meet, the people come, you get a relationship with them. So it's a reunion. And 15 years ago, like that, you know.
Amanda Gladix agrees. She works at Oregon State University in Astoria and is on the Fisher Poets Planning Committee.
There's a buzz. I mean, you start to see people show up in town, you know, on Thursday night. And it starts with kind of a gathering of performers on Thursday night, sort of a welcome gathering. And that's a really cool experience to see people who have been coming together, you know, for many years, or maybe this is their first Fisher Poets and they're just meeting people for the first time. But there's just this real sense of community and camaraderie and respect for, you know, both the work that those people do in their fishing seasons and the respect for the artistry and the writing that they work on.
She's been helping pull the gathering together since 2016, and she says year after year, it's an important time for the community of Astoria.
There's a really strong support for Fisher Poetry and the Fisher Poets Gathering here in Astoria as well. So I love that there's this really wide geographic connection and then also this very local component to the gathering.
This year, she says the planning committee worked hard to maintain the sense of community at the gathering with rehearsals and virtual meeting spaces. Clark Whitney of Soldotna says it's gratifying knowing how many fishermen are tuned in from around the country.
I just want to stay a part of it. So every chance I get, I want to try to perform with them.
Mm-hmm. He's been writing poems since his first days fishing in Bristol Bay, and he says his poems would often turn into songs. During the pandemic, he picked up the guitar, and he incorporated it into his performance at Fisher Poets this year with a song he wrote called I Want to Be a Fisherman. It's from when he started fishing with his dad in the bay.
In Kenai,
oh,
I'm Sabine Pooks.
I want to be a fisherman. I won't wear a business suit. Oh, I'd rather wear a hoodie and a pair of rubber boots. Rather stand upon a rolling deck and look out at my net than to hang out in an office where from some chair I'd set.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
I know it all began, 'cause I've yet to see a man-made thing that can begin to match the mountains and the waters and the fish we like to catch. Throw the boo-hoo-ee, let her go, let her go. Throw the boo-hoo-ee, let her go.